Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello out there, and welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Kate Spencer.
And I'm Dori Shafrir.
And we are not experts.
No, but we are two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
Okay, and before we get into it, we would like to encourage you to visit our website, forever35podcast.com, for links to anything we talk about on the show. You can follow us on Twitter at forever35pod, Instagram at Forever 35 Podcast, and you can also join the Forever 35 Facebook group where the password is serums. And we also have a newsletter at forever35podcast.com/newsletter. You can leave us a voicemail or text us at 781-591-0390. And our email is forever35podcast@gmail.com. And we love to hear from you.
We truly really do. So please reach out.
Drop us a text.
Yes, Kate loves getting texts.
I do. I love a text.
I also just want to mention that tickets are officially on sale for my book launch event, which is called Worth the Wait. I really hope it will be worth the wait.
It will be, because I'm going to be there.
Because Kate Spencer will be there, along with other special guests such as Jasmine Guillory, mm-hmm. Maureen Gu, mm-hmm. Elizabeth Holmes, uh-huh. Courtney Chuzano,
ooh, baby.
Rachel Wilkerson Miller,
loving it.
Tanya Rapley, Emily into Ferris it. Will be designing two bespoke cocktail/mocktails for the event.
Glug. I am here for all of this.
It's going to be great. There's two types of tickets. One of them is free, which gets you access to the live stream. And then there's also a paid ticket that not only gets you, obviously, access to the live stream, but you get access to the after party and a hardcover copy of Thanks for Waiting that is also signed. Hello. And you also will have the opportunity to ask questions during the event if you get the paid ticket. So,
now,
oh, and also I should mention that the paid ticket, the books are being sold by a wonderful local independent bookstore here in LA, Book Soup. So if you haven't bought a book yet, and you want to support an independent bookstore, this is a great way to do that. The books will be mailed out. They will be signed. So, and you get access to everything at the live event. So I hope some of you will take advantage of that.
Well, I will. And I like how you promoted the event with, like, everybody had their topic that they're talking about. And then you said that I would be there to talk to you about whatever it is we talk about, which really made me laugh.
I mean, what do we talk about, Kate?
I mean, everything. I mean, truly, there's nothing off limits. Although, you know, I have to tell you, I've been listening to Busy Phillips's podcast, and recently she was talking about her butt and bidets. And I was like, oh. And like, she was getting graphic about her stuff with her butt. And I felt like a kindred, like, butt sister to her. That's all.
You felt like a kindred butt sister to her.
I feel kindred butt connections to anyone who talks openly about their butt issues. This is TMI. Is it TMI? No.
Kate, you act like we've never talked about your butt on this podcast.
That's true. We've talked. I mean, we do declare that butt care is self-care quite often.
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, shout out to Busy Phillips.
Well,
I'm
glad Busy is getting on the butt train.
She's a big bidet fan.
I mean, who isn't, honestly?
Do you have a bidet going in your house right now?
You know, I had one in my old house, and we have not installed it in the new house.
I think I would like to get one.
Yeah, I think we just need to do. I just haven't done it.
Right. But it like requires unless you have a fancy bidet toilet or like your own bidet coming out of the wall, it's like requires you like hooking a little squirter.
Yes, it's just like an attachment.
And it squirts the toilet water onto your butt?
No. Not like the toilet, not like the water from the bowl.
Okay. That'd be weird.
Anyway, how's it going, Kate?
I don't know. I'm having a little bit of like a shame spiral because I fucked up a plans you and I had. And so I have been like reeling over that. And then like that leads me to shame spiral over like my entire life, which has been a new thing since kind of like coming to terms with my ADHD. Like what's weird, I think, about getting an adult diagnosis of anything, then you especially I think in terms of like mental health, it's like then you reflect on your entire life and all these things that have happened over the course of your life that have like brought you pain, you're suddenly able to see with clarity. And it's really hard. I don't know if you have anything like that. Like, have you ever looked back and you're like, oh my God, all these things and all these feelings and all this like kind of pain and not understanding, it was all because of this that I now understand as an adult. But as a teen and a kid and even a young adult, like I just felt a lot of shame.
Yeah, there's been some reframing for me around the idea of being sensitive.
Go on.
Because I feel like a lot of times when I was growing up, it was a lot of like, you're so sensitive. Stop being so sensitive. Like,
was that something you said to yourself or your family?
No. Something that people said to me. And that my reactions to things were like overly sensitive and I was, you know, too sensitive. And it was like very much framed as a pejorative.
Yeah.
You know, something that I needed to change. And now as a grown up, I'm like, oh yeah, of course I'm sensitive. You know, like, and that's not a bad thing. Like I feel things.
God, yeah, I know.
And I shouldn't apologize for feeling things deeply and like reacting strongly if someone was like making a joke at my expense or, you know what I mean? Like not responding well to teasing. It's like, well, yeah, that's mean. Like, why would I be cool with it? Why would I just let that roll off my back?
It's also interesting too, because one thing I've been talking about with my kids is like the difference between like loving teasing and mean teasing. Mm-hmm. And our family, like in the family I grew up in, like there's a lot of like loving teasing, but there is a fine line. And also sometimes that just because it's done out of love doesn't mean it doesn't hurt
totally
one's feelings.
Yeah. And also like if someone is telling you like what you may think you're doing this in a loving way, but the way I am responding to this is not positively, then like you should stop. It's impact, not intent. Exactly. Yes. It's impact, not intent.
Yeah. I mean, I think about that with like all actions. That's a thing I have in my head a lot. But yeah, so that's something I've been kind of like wallowing in. Anytime I mess something up, like I double scheduled myself with like you and I and our friend had made tentative plans, and then I made plans with my daughter, and then I like got home last night and I was like, oh my God, I have too many things going on this day. And then anytime I do something that is like a symptom of how my brain works, I then reflect on like decades. I don't know how to describe it, but it's it's probably part of the process, but it's also like kind of emotionally challenging. Like it's kind of upsetting. And I have to, you know, and like, I feel like I was misdiagnosed when I was a teenager. And so I just have a lot of like, I have a lot of shit I have to work out, which is really good that my intention was to make an appointment with my therapist because I did that. So I'm going to be calling her up for some talk.
Nice.
Yeah. And in other news, my friend gifted me a tarot deck and I'm very excited to take that out for a spin.
I think your tarot is supposed to be gifted to you, right?
I think the idea, like obviously one can buy themselves their own tarot deck, yes. But I think there is like some sort of like special meaning when it is gifted to you. And I have to say it was a gift like that she gave me in thank you for helping her and her husband when their son was born. And it just felt like very meaningful. I got very emotional. It was very kind of her. And it's really beautiful. Like I think, and so I feel like the intent of the present is like weighted in the deck of cards, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I've really been enjoying just like tootling around with them.
Oh.
Now, before I shift focus to you, I did want to shout out that there is a Forever 35 ADHD Facebook group that I've recently joined, and I'm learning a lot in it. So I wanted to just mention that for anybody else who might benefit from such a community.
Oh, that's so nice.
I mean, the people who listen to this pod, they're the best.
They are the best. They are truly the best.
So, Dory, it's been, I was going to start singing, it's been seven hours and 16 days, but it's been 2 years since you took your love away from me. No, since you went on a family vacation.
Yeah, it's been about a year and a half. The last time we went on a family trip was December 2019.
Your son was not even walking.
He was
like a little baby.
He was 8 months old. We went to New York. That was great. But like little did we know that we would not be going anywhere for a year and a half. So we're just going away for the weekend. It's like not even, it's really like not even 48 hours. It's going to be like a day and a half. And we're driving, so it's not like we're getting on a plane, but yeah. By the time this airs, I will be back, so
great.
We'll like know how it will have gone. But yeah, you know, there's just a lot of logistics involved when there's a child. So mm-hmm. I have this like massive packing list for him because he's also in a phase where, you know, he's very used to his structure and his routines. And so I'm a little nervous about how this is all going to go when he's in a different place. So I'm trying to remember to bring like his bunny and his bath towel. You know what I mean? Like all the little things that he's just like used to.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, we'll see. He's going to be sleeping in a pack and play, which could be a disaster, but might go okay.
Yeah, or it could be fine.
Or it could be fine. Exactly.
Here's a question. We'll see. What have you planned for yourself in terms of things that you are bringing to provide yourself with relaxation and care, Dory? What are you going to, is that at all a focus for you? And if not, let's make it
work. You know, Kate, I kind of ascribe to this notion that there's no such thing as a vacation with like little kids. Mm-hmm. It's a trip.
Mm-hmm.
So I will bring my Kindle. I'm not expecting to really like relax on this trip, but I am looking forward to having some quality family time. Mm. So there's my answer.
It's a good answer.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm a little nervous. I think my husband is also nervous. My husband is also a person who, he gets very nervous like before unfamiliar things. So like we're going somewhere that we've never gone before. It's just like I think he's a little like anxious about it. And so I'm trying not to let that anxiety kind of rub off on me.
Oof, that's hard. I mean,
he's also the type, of person where like he'll be super anxious before a trip. And then like, I would say this has happened 75% of the times that we've gone away to new places. He comes back and he's like, well, okay, now we go to this place. Like now this is our place. You know what I mean? Like he'll embrace it once he experiences it, but prior to experiencing it, he's kind of like, ooh.
Why do you think that is? That's so interesting.
I think it's control. You know, if he's going to a familiar environment, a place that he's been before, it's like he knows what to expect.
Yeah.
And he also is someone who really likes to be prepared and like know what to do. And I think when you're going to an unfamiliar place, you don't have that.
I get that.
That's my interesting theory, though.
You don't ever feel that way to me.
No, I don't. And like, I do have issues with control, but this is not one of them.
Is there a single person who doesn't have issues with control? Like, I'm sure it's like a fully awakened person spiritually or something, but like, how can we not have problems with, like, everyone has some sort of control thing, right?
You know, it's true. And it's like another thing similar to like being highly sensitive is I feel like people calling other people control freaks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're right. It's like who wants to feel like they're totally out of control?
No one.
Like,
it all manifests in its own way. And I will just also point out that a lot of times these labels are affixed to women.
Mm-hmm.
Do you hear cis men called control freaks often? I could be wrong, Dory. Could be wrong.
Definitely not as much.
So, just saying.
Yeah. Yep. So, Kate, was there anything else you wanted to share with our listeners?
Okay, I mean, heads up, this is about bugs, but I did find two roaches in my house. Well, one in my house and one in my office. Yeah, I'm not excited about it. And I am having an exterminator come because I'm not like phobic about bugs, but roaches I am. I'm like fully,
I hate roaches.
I really like, there was one, a dead one. It was dead. I don't know if it got like dragged in or someone stepped on it, but it was dead in my like kitchen area. And just removing it, I was having like a physical reaction that was very overwhelming. And then like an hour later, I was sitting working and there was like another tinier one walking by me. And I grabbed my Louise Penny book and I threw it on the roach. And then I left it there overnight because I couldn't deal with it. And then today I finally did, but I took the cover off and I threw it away. Like I mean, it was disgusting, but this is not something I am chill about. That's all. I'm not chill about a roach. I'm chill about a cricket, a bee, a wasp even. A big beetle I can handle. Spiders I have no problems with. It is roaches that really fucking freak me out. And so I'm, yeah. And, you know, I should say, like, not that I enjoy subscribing to gender roles, but I do like having my husband around because he is not afraid of them and will just kill them or get rid of them. And he is gone for 2 months. And so it's on me, Dory. It's on me and Louise Penny.
You and Louise.
Me and Inspector Gamache. It's kind of fun to kill a roach with a mystery book about murders.
It feels somehow apropos.
You know, felt like it fit. Anyway, that's where I'm at. Should we tell our listeners about our lovely guest this week?
Yes, we should.
So we are going to be speaking with Georgia Clark, who is a novelist and a performer. She is the author of the new romantic comedy book, It Had to Be You, as well as The Regulars and The Bucket List and others. And she is the host and founder of a really wonderful, very popular storytelling night called Generation Women, which is just fantastic. And she's a native Australian. She lives in Brooklyn with her wife and, as she likes to say, a fridge full of cheese, which she tells us about
in great detail. I mean, to be fair, we asked her. I don't think she was expecting us to really like hone in on that specific detail, but
you know, Dory's a journalist.
Like, what?
Dory's like, what specific kinds of cheese?
Look, when someone talks about a cheese plate, I'm like a dog with a bone. Okay. I'm like a woman with a cheese plate.
Yes. I love a cheese plate. You know what I had for dinner last night?
I really did want to know, like, which store she went to.
I know, like, are you buying Murray's? Is it a Cowgirl Creamery? What's happening here? A brand we don't know? Trader Joe's?
We could probably move on.
I mean, I would love, like, could we talk to a fromagier?
Oh my gosh. I just thought of a great idea for a podcast.
A cheesemonger podcast?
Yes, a cheese podcast.
There has to already be a cheese podcast.
I'm sure there is.
But like, I would love a cheesemonger guest to just like walk us through cheese.
Yes.
I had, Dory, what I would argue is the best sandwich for dinner last night, which is like a nice thick white bread, mayonnaise, which I know some people don't like, a sharp cheddar, and then fresh tomatoes. Salt and pepper.
Ooh, yum. That's
my favorite sandwich.
Okay, Kate, there was in 2018, there was one season of a podcast called Behind the Rind.
Oh, I love that title.
The Story and Science of Cheese. And they said that season two was in the works, but that looks like that was quite some time ago. There was also, a currently updating podcast called A Slice of Cheese.
Okay.
Where Jenny Linford, food writer and heroine of the cheese world, after her essay on the plight of the UK cheesemaker in COVID went viral, talks all things cheese. Cheese, foods that go with cheese pairings and more. Wow. Okay. I think I might need to listen to this up.
We need to have this person on as a guest.
Yes. A British female cheesemonger talking about all things cheese on a podcast. Wow.
Count us in.
Seriously.
Have you ever had Cooper cheese, Dory? Have you heard of Cooper cheese?
I don't think so.
Okay, so my favorite kind of cheese is American cheese. Don't judge me, Dory. I love American cheese. I love it so much. Okay, but Cooper cheese is like American adjacent cheese, and it's very good. Mm. I love like a sliced processed cheese for my bread.
Hey, look, to each their own.
I mean, I also love like a nice cheese, but you know, American on a burger, a grilled cheese with only American cheese. That's the ticket.
Yes, that I'm with you on. I'm fully with you on that.
Okay. Well, listen, I would love to keep exploring cheese. Anyway, we get started with Georgia and we talk to her about cheese and many other things. So
indeed. All right. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online.
Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I like to care for my skin, duh. And it's also something that I do love to kind of like get into the research on.
You do have a curious mind.
Look, I have a curious mind. I can't help it.
You do.
But today's sponsor, OneSkin, has made that easy because they do their own fantastic research for their products. In fact, their products are scientifically validated to improve your skin's health while targeting the root cause of aging. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to switch off the aging cells that cause lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin, and they've got several studies to back it up. They also have an amazing new sunscreen.
Ooh, our favorite.
Our fave. It's the OS1 Shield Protect and Repair SPF 30 Plus. It's got the peptide. It's a mineral sunscreen. It's got antioxidants. It comes in tinted and untinted. I mean, like, what can't this thing do? I'm just saying. I love it. It's so easy to use, and I love that it's just like zoop, and it feels so nice going on. But don't take my word for it. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews and was recently recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands of 2024. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code FOREVER at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code FOREVER. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support your show and tell them we sent you.
Our guest today is Georgia Clark, and I want to just note that I have known Georgia for many years, over a decade, because I had the privilege of being her improv comedy teacher in the year 2009, we've established. 11 years ago? That's crazy. And Georgia was very funny. And so whenever I think of you, I think of you as a comedian, and you were a writer all the way back then as well. I think you had written YA, but not your first adult novel. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So I just want to clarify that, like, we go way back. Everybody.
Wow. He was an amazing teacher.
That's very really nice, Georgia.
Fed my love / obsession with improv.
Well, look, we can dork out privately about improv, because I just realized I want to ask you all these questions about how comedy influences your writing, but that's not why we're here necessarily. We're here to talk about self-care and you and how you care for yourself and others. And so let's just first kick things off with learning about a self-care practice in your own life. Is there something that is a regular, consistent practice for you that provides self-care for you?
I do have a regular self-care practice. Every night at around 6 or 7 cocktail hour time, I have a solo cheese plate, tiny cheese plate, and a glass of wine. And my wife knows it is my time to be alone and enjoy a small plate of soft and hard cheese, a pickle, maybe a little fig jam. And I will have my glass of wine, maybe a little bit of good California weed, which is legal now here in New York City. And I'll just enjoy myself.
Okay, this is amazing. And this is not something you'd include your wife in, ever.
She knows it's my time.
It's your time. Is this something you've done for a while? Is this a pandemic practice? How did you get started kind of establishing this special ritual for yourself?
I actually started doing this as a teenager. So I would study in the day. Coming up to my finals, we call it the HSC. You guys call it the SAT. And right. I would work very hard and study. And then I would have a glass of beer. I was on a long leash, my family, and a little plate of chips and watch whatever was on at 6 o'clock, Friends or Seinfeld or MASH, because Australia is inundated with American culture, which I loved, probably one here. And it was just part of how I would study and then reward myself. And I've never really gotten out of that habit. I did in my 20s and 30s when I was a little wilder. But now as I'm sort of settling down into more of a kind of calmer life, my little cheese plate practice is back.
Okay. Tell me about your cheese plate, because as someone who really enjoys putting together a cheese plate, I would like to know what is on your cheese plate.
Yes, same. And is there like a cracker companion that goes along with the cheese?
Yeah, do you do fruit? Do you do nuts? Do you have spreads? Do you do honey?
What like kind of cheese? Are you a cheese expert
everything.
At this point? Yeah, this is amazing. We haven't had cheese as self-care yet, and I'm here for it.
Cheese is definitely self-care. I know there's other cheese listeners who I am connecting with right now. I'm speaking their truth. I'm happy to be here for you. I always will have a soft cheese, always will have a brie. So if I'm in a rush, it's just a couple of bickies, which is how we call crackers. And look, I'll have a laughing cow. It's mm-hmm. not the most fancy cheese. It's a basic cream cheese, but I love it. I would love to have a little aged Gouda in there if I was, you know, really going for it. Pickles, that's something I've really embrace from being in New York City. Fig jam, mustard, maybe some almonds. It depends on how crazy I want to go. Usually it's very simple and small, but if I'm really treating myself, it can blow out.
Do you ever have like a cut meat? Like
I'm veggie.
Oh, you're a vegetarian. Okay. So I like this. This is a vegetarian cheese plate. Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have any, are there any like special brands or things that you want to recommend that you put on your cheese plate that listeners might be interested in procuring for themselves?
If you haven't tried a chutney, I would recommend it. It's very nice to have on a cheese plate. It's more of a British thing, you know, like a cheese and chutney sandwich. They make really good ones at Pret in London. It's always my first stop. But I would say try a chutney, try a fig jam. It's all about the textures and the flavors and having a nice combination of all of them.
You're really speaking my language. Thank you for indulging us about your cheese plate.
I love this so much. Well, you know, it also kind of, and I don't know, Georgia, if this is even something that you consider, but for me, like one thing that often is so taken out of the conversation about food is how like it's either like food is either like our fuel or we have food for fun, but never just like this, the pleasurable ritual of eating kind of removed from conversations of like diet culture and nutrition, like just the textures and the sitting down with it. Like, do you look at your phone while you're eating this cheese plate, or do you just kind of zone out and take a mental break?
Usually what I do is it's kind of involved with my writing practice as well. I'll have a TV show on. I'm rewatching Schitt's Creek, obviously. It's a show that demands a rewatch. And then I will be tip-tapping away at my work. So I'll sort of relax into having a sip of wine, a little bit of cheese, and then I try and just let my imagination, and I've got my show on, wander back to what I've been working on that day in a state of open curiosity, as opposed to, oh, I guess I better edit. And then I'll just sort of like tiptoe my way back into whatever my chapter was and then start reading and making notes. And I'll sort of go in and out of it all night. I think one thing that I realized about writing is so many people, when I would always ask my question, my standard question that I always like to ask writers is, what's the most enjoyable part about it for you? Like, what do you enjoy most out of the whole process? And I would ask that question at so many writers' events, and so often the answer would be nothing. I don't like anything about it, which would always surprise me because I really do find so much pleasure in it. I will say now I've been doing it for a while, so I think my talent and my taste are starting to become more aligned, which just takes, you know, your 10,000 hours to get into it. But usually, like, that's the cheese plate and the wine is like a gateway into doing, getting back into the work and reading and making notes and editing. Like, I'll draft in the day and then I'll sort of pick away at it at night and just start to kind of try and enjoy it, because I think you have to enjoy it. Well, I want to enjoy it.
So you are a nighttime writer as well?
Only for editing.
Only for editing. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Can you give our listeners a quick rundown of what your new book, It Had to Be You, is about?
Would love to. It Had to Be You is my first romantic comedy. Will definitely not be my last, because I had so much fun writing it and so much fun putting it out. It interweaves five modern love stories around a mismatched pair of Brooklyn wedding planners. And the premise is Liv and Elliot Goldenhorn have been a happily married couple for 2 decades, and they have an at-home business in Brooklyn, in Love in New York, a wedding planning business, until Elliot dies while visiting his younger, blonder girlfriend, Savannah Shipley. And in a twist no one sees coming, Elliot leaves his half of the wedding planning business to Savannah, who didn't know he was married and who shows up in New York from Kentucky with a smile on her face and a potted orchid as a gift, ready to help Liv revive this now sort of failing wedding planning business. And so Savannah and Liv both have a love storyline, and the other storylines are of the various vendors who work the weddings, the musicians and the caterers and the florists, and all braided together in a Love Actually style narrative. And it is very much a romantic comedy. And I just had such a ball writing it, and it's very sweet and heartfelt and sexy and warm-hearted and hopefully all the things that you want out of a rom-com.
Georgia, how has your own love life influenced, I guess, specifically this book and how you write about love and romance?
I mean, it so much of myself and my relationships. Like, I'm married, so my marriage and my history has been poured into these pages. I wrote the book over getting married. So I got married in 2018, the fall of 2018. I asked my then girlfriend, now wife, to marry me. She said yes. And we've been together for 5 years. And then we got married in 2019, which is when I was writing the whole book. So everything that the main characters are learning about wedding planning and thinking about wedding planning, I was learning about it and really thinking kind of deeply about what is a wedding? Why do we have them? What are my expectations about what this relationship will be? How is that? How have they changed? Because in this story, and It Had to Be You, all of the couples are kind of grappling with tradition versus modernity, like their own versions of that, which is, I think, what everyone is grappling with in a wedding planning situation. You know, do I want to wear a white dress? Do I want to wear a white dress because that's what everyone else has done in the past? Or do I actually want to wear one? Well, hey, why do we wear white dresses anyway? Like, there's just so much going on there. So certainly a lot of like what I was going through, like actually at the time, weddings and wedding planning, which is, you know, no joke. But I've really started to enjoy pouring more of myself and my kind of secret hopes and fears into the work. And I just didn't sort of in some way like realize that would make it better. Or I think what happens with a lot of people is you sort of, you're living your own life and you're like, it's not that interesting. You know, I'm just doing my thing because your everyday is so normal to you, but it's not normal to everyone else. And we're also fascinated by how we live our lives and we want to understand. And, you know, your pod does an amazing job at this, like, of peeling back, like, all of these, like, different eccentricities and quirks that we have when it comes to everything about how we live our lives. So I feel like I'm definitely putting more of my feelings about love and my, you know, own dating disasters and things like that have been woven into the DNA of this. And I think, like every novel I write, it's been really satisfying to make the writing more personal.
It's so interesting what you're talking about, you know, people kind of not realizing that their own stories are actually really interesting and compelling. And you have a storytelling show that is intergenerational, and, you know, listening to your show, watching your show, you really highlight this idea that people's individual stories are so fascinating, and that we all have this kind of trove of stories that we just accept as like our own personal histories, and we don't realize that they're so interesting to other people. So I'd love to hear a little bit about kind of what do you think the average person can gain from telling their story, and how can they kind of go about doing that?
That's such a great question. Wow. Yes, my storytelling night is Generation Women. We invite a woman or non-binary performer in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s plus to tell an original story on a theme. We've been around since 2017 as a monthly show. We obviously had virtual shows over the course of the pandemic. But after that, we're back to live shows, thank God. And from doing the show for all of those years, we've had some high profile people do the show. We've had some kind of like low key celebrities. But I will say the most impactful stories generally come from less public people, because generally those performers are more open in being really truthful and kind of telling their story. And what I think that our audience is looking for, and what people really respond to, is vulnerability, emotional honesty, and like a constant theme. And, you know, you really see it, especially as you get through the decades, is this sense of resilience. You know, we are so resilient as people, I believe. Everyone kind of has the capacity in them to get through enormous change, and like change that they seek themselves and put themselves into, you know, new positions or like leaving a marriage or something like that. And then change that's of course forced upon you that you have no control over. But the way in which we survive and persist, and I think those sort of stories are the ones that I love, and often it is things like, you know, maybe a divorce or something like that. It's nothing kind of once in a lifetime, like once in a generation. These are our stories. This is what happens to a lot of people. But being able to hear that someone else is struggling, getting to get through something, and that they got out on the other side and they grew and they changed. Like, we need stories of hope. I think that's kind of what people are really looking for, as well as just the nitty gritty of how people really think and really feel and really parent and really date, because we are so used to, you know, we are sort of moving past this like perfect filtered Instagram culture. We're talking a lot more openly, I think, these days about our, you know, hearts and minds. But there's like, I think that at a storytelling show, people are looking to other human beings to just answer the very simple question of like, how are you living your life? How are you doing it? Because I don't know if I'm doing it the right way. And when you hear that we're all bumbling through, and we all sort of, you know, come in and out of imposter syndrome, and we all like, you know, are really just making it up as we go along, it's so comforting. It's just so comforting to know that we're all so much more the same than we are different. So I think that's, and the, you know, the benefit of telling your story is you can elevate your experience to the, you know, like the respect that it deserves, that, you know, your life is fascinating. And I love giving performers a platform to talk about whatever they want to tell, whatever their story is, to sort of step into their own power. Like, my favorite thing about the show is how good it makes the performance feel. Like, no one gets off that stage with anything other than like a huge smile on their face. And like, that was so fun. Like, that was amazing. And it just feels so great, especially for older people, because no one's knocking on their door being like, come and stand on a stage and tell your story, like, except for us. Like, I know, and I'm friends with now, is so many like 70-something women in New York, like, I've got a million of them. Like, I can tell you who the sassy broads are, and they're amazing. So that's what people are looking for, and that's what the show celebrates.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Okay, we're back.
Do you feel like, you know, it's interesting just thinking about the idea of a storytelling show in which you're speaking authentically in front of a group of people. But I do think there, on a smaller scale, just the ability to speak authentically out loud about our wants, our needs, our lives is so powerful and so scary. And it really is like telling our own story and sharing our authentic truths. I realize these are all like self-help buzzwords, but I also truly believe in them. But there's something really empowering about that. And it seems like a form of self-care to me, right? Like being honest with your own story. I'm curious if it's been, I don't want to use the word therapeutic, but has there been some healing in it for you in, and maybe has it influenced, you know, other parts of your life getting to like standing up and speaking on a regular basis and speaking truthfully about, like you said, how you're bumbling through?
Definitely. I mean, it's been so good. It's really been a reframe of the narrative for aging. It's nothing will make you feel just more present and grounded into the life that you're living right now than being around people that are like significantly older than you, as well as being like younger than you. Like the true multi like generational nature of it is incredibly powerful. I remember being backstage once with a group of older women, and I was just doing that thing where you're like looking in the mirror at your wrinkles and you're like, oh gosh, look at this new wrinkle. And they just all looked at me like, oh honey, like you have no idea what you're in store for. Like it's not about a couple of wrinkles around your eyes. Like your entire body is going to change. And I'm like, good note. We'll never make that mistake again.
Good note.
Yeah, like I'm definitely through, because I tell a story every month as well. And like I have, through the act of doing that, come to process so many things and realize like, oh, that actually, I told a story about how I accidentally signed up for a month of hot yoga. I thought it was regular yoga. And then like after I'd handed my credit card over, they're like, oh, have you done hot yoga before? I'm like, I'm sorry, what? And I was like, oh, that's okay. I'll do a month of hot yoga. And my mother has always told me that I'm not very robust. That's one of her kind of catchphrases about me. I'm not very robust, Georgia. She's just not very robust. And I'd always internalize that and be like, not very robust. Like, you know, find me like curled up on the couch with a cup of tea in my like spindly hand or whatever. And it was only after I started dating my wife that she was like, you're not robust. You're just lazy. And I was like, interesting reframe. And then after doing a month of hot yoga, I got so jacked and was super fit. I still do it now. And I really was like, I don't think that's true. I don't think I'm not robust. Like, I think that's just something my mother has always told me. And it was only through kind of telling that story that I was sort of figuring that out. So it's been, I think writing is so amazing for that. I mean, you guys must experience this as well. Like you're not just telling your story, but you're processing your story and finding new layers of meaning. And then you're also working out how to tell the story to an audience. So firstly, you're telling it to yourself in a new way, and then you're telling it to an audience. Do you feel that?
Yeah, it's a mind fuck in a lot of ways. And it's, and I do think writing can be such, like, I just bought a new journal, as Dory heard earlier today. But writing just for yourself in terms of like reprocessing or relearning what happened to you and figuring out how to share it, like, you know, it doesn't need to be for consumption or for anyone else to read. It's such an act. It really is an act of self-care in so many ways, you know, writing out our stories and kind of figuring them out. Man, I'm rambling. But because our lives are so online, you know, it's, everything feels very performative. And so just to kind of do that, doing it for yourself, it seems really empowering. Also, I think you're robust, Georgia. I mean,
and I don't think you're lazy. Like,
But also, this is how, like, one thing someone says to us, one thing, it becomes the story we tell ourselves for decades. And that, and I'm sure your mother meant no harm by it.
She didn't. I love my mother.
I know I'm like, oh, what have I said to my kid that they're going to fucking hold on to for years? But it's interesting the kind of stories we tell ourselves, and they, and then when we disprove our own stories, like you did at hot yoga class.
Yeah. I also think because we often define ourselves. I had a best friend in my 20s, my very single 20s, and I had a best friend that I lived with, and we were in a platonic relationship because I was single and she was single too. And I was the crazy one in that pair. Like, I was the one always getting into trouble and doing things where she was like, I don't know if that's a good idea, Georgia. I'm like, no, let's do it. Like, we had our kind of roles. Like, she was the sensible one and I was like the wild one. And it struck me a few years ago that in my relationship with my wife, that dynamic has been inverted a little bit. She's not wild in terms of, like, she wasn't like doing all the stuff I was doing, like shoplifting and whatever. Very early 20s. But she's more of the sort of like outgoing, like the one who's going to jump off a cliff. And I'm the one being like, I don't know, babe, if that's a good idea. So we're changeable. Like we can change depending on who we're with. And that really interests me as well, because like, as we move through life, there are some things that I think I hold on to myself that's really part of my self-identity. Like, I am this kind of person, but I'm also very aware of how mutable we can be and how much we can change depending on our surroundings and who we surround ourselves with.
Georgia, it's kind of funny you said that, because one thing I feel like I observe of you as just like a bystander to your life is that you are like, you really have your shit together. Do you feel like that's true? I think it's because I read you write a really wonderful newsletter, and I always read every word, and I just feel like you are on top of things. You are a person who just knows how to do it and knows how to get stuff done. And I'm curious if you actually feel that way, or if you are, as you said, still bumbling.
Wow, that's an amazing question. I definitely don't feel like I'm as bumbling as I was in my 20s and sort of in my 30s. I'm 41 now, team 40. And I feel like I'm really on top of things in some ways, particularly right now with work. Like, this book is my most successful book. I think it's like the best written book that I've ever written. It's my fifth book. So, like, you know, I've been at it for a while. But there are some things in which I just feel like I'm in this extended adolescence. Like, my wife and I still rent. You know, we have not made that leap to home ownership. We're still figuring out fertility stuff. So sometimes I feel like I've got things together, and sometimes I feel like I'm just stretching out my 30s well into my 40s. But I definitely feel more balanced when it comes to, I've been so hungry for creative success for so long, like ever, you know, right out of the gate. It was like, I want to be a writer. I want to be an artist. I want to be this and that. And I definitely put all of my eggs in one basket. So whatever creative project I was working on, it was do or die. And often it was completely misguided. Like, I'd be entering a competition and I'd be like, if I don't win this competition, I mean, I don't even, you know, some terrible thing would happen. And then, of course, I wouldn't win the competition and I'd completely fall apart. And this was like a cycle that went on for many years. I think until I, you know, met my wife and became in a relationship, and that became a separate thing from work, and started to just try and realize, oh, things are better if you spread yourself a little more evenly, because then if one of the tent poles comes down, the whole thing doesn't fall down. It's like, oh, well, maybe I had, you know, like something in work didn't pan out this month or week or year sometimes, but I have good friendships, I have my health, like I have a good relationship at home. You know, I have a few little hobbies that I do, so it's okay. And that took a long time to get there. Like, that was not something I was really thinking about, and it made me desperately unhappy for a really long time. Very driven, very, like, motivated, but I was just constantly feeling like I was, you know, like a failure.
Wow. I mean, a lot of what you say, I just wrote a book about being a late bloomer. So a lot of what you say, you know, resonates with me as well. So that's, yeah, it's interesting to think about. And it's also interesting to think about, you know, the ways that we are perceived by others versus how we perceive ourselves.
Yeah.
Right.
It's fascinating.
Like when I was writing my book, I had a few friends say to me, I never thought of, like, I don't think of you as a late bloomer. Like you always have your shit together. And I'm like, really? Because like, that's not how I see myself, you know? So it's just interesting. Those kinds of outside perceptions versus what we're feeling inside.
Yeah. And I think we often think about what we don't have and what we're still working towards,
yes,
as opposed to what we do have.
Yes.
Totally. My wife and I was trying to figure out where home base is going to be, if we leave New York City or not. And I love New York. I've lived here for 12 years. But part of what I'm thinking about as I process this is I have had an amazing time here. I don't know if we're going to move, but like the past decade has been so life-changing. I mean, I fell in love with improv so much and just really got so much pleasure and satisfaction out of like diving headfirst into improv and made friends and met my partner and had a great time. And I moved here with no visa and no like friends. I didn't know anyone in the city. I didn't have a job. I didn't have a place to stay. And that is a real accomplishment to kind of make that move and build that life. And so many of us have done something like that, like moved away and made a life. But we tend to just kind of count that. It's like, that's just living. That's just life. And it's like, no, that's actually a real accomplishment. Like, you know, not everyone does that. And the things that we have accomplished, I think it's harder to just sort of hold them up to the light. It's so much easier to just to be kind of like, because the goalposts are always moving, as I'm sure you guys know as well. Like, you know, but even as you're achieving what's on your bucket list, like it's, you're already writing the next one, you know, it's like, oh yeah, that's done. And let me tell you about what I haven't done, which is a real practice for me to kind of undo that and just sort of just sit and enjoy in what has been, you know, that I have done. Yeah. As opposed to what I haven't.
That's, yeah, that's such a good point.
I want to ask, before we wrap up, I wanted to talk about your kind of cross-country travels during this pandemic with your wife.
Yeah.
And possibly like how, what you learned about each other, if there were any tough moments or how it strengthened your relationship. Because I think one thing I really have been enjoying reading your book is how you don't make the relationships perfect. Like it feels like imperfection and messiness and knowing it's not always going to be okay and knowing we're always not going to be perfect in relationships feels like a big theme to me. That's what I'm getting out of it.
Yes.
So I'm wondering just kind of what that was like and how it impacted your relationship with each other.
Wow. So yeah, this time last year we were on a road trip, and I will say we went with a friend, which was, my very good mutual friend of ours, Isabel Izzy, she suggested to us, we'd all been in New York over COVID breaking out and had been in lockdown. And, you know, New York was extremely grim in March, April. The city is coming back to life now, but at the time I just never experienced anything like it. It was full apocalypse. Like the streets are empty. There's just, it was insane. And it was very frightening. And then by the end of March, things were starting to loosen up a little bit. And my friend said, I want to go to California. I've got a week off work. I think we should go like right now. And I put it to Lindsay and was like, I think we should do this road trip with Isabel. You know, we're never going to get this chance again. We've got to get out of it. You've got to get out of town. We've got to get out of Dodge. Let's just book a car and go for it. And I think what was interesting actually is she's usually the spontaneous one. Like if there's someone who's going to be like, let's go to this party. No, let's go to this one. Like that's usually Lynn's. And I'm like, can we just stay home and watch Schitt's Creek again? And this was an occasion where those roles were flipped. She kind of was like, oh, I don't know. Like if we have more time, we can plan and we can kind of find the perfect route and we can kind of do all these things and we can like hit all these amazing spots. But, you know, if we go now, it might not be, it's not like she's a perfectionist, but I think she just wanted to maximize the opportunity. But I just said, look, this is an opportunity that's going to pass us by because otherwise Izzy's going to go and I don't drive as well. So, you know, you'll have someone to drive with. And I was so proud of her because she bit the bullet. And within 3 days, we had packed up our apartment, and we'd not the whole, we didn't leave our apartment, but we packed up our life and we left for 9 weeks. So we did like a 2 week trip across the country. We stayed with some friends in Montana. We stayed at Lake Tahoe and we only had two Airbnbs booked the first two nights. And then we were just making it up as we went along. Then we got to LA and we stayed in LA for 7 weeks, just staying at friends' houses who had left the city. So we didn't have anything planned and we were just bouncing around from like empty house to empty house for 7 weeks, which was like kind of amazing when I look back on it. I was like, wow, how did we do that for so long? And it was wonderful because it really shook us up out of our routine. I will say like our relationship was probably better in lockdown. Like our relationship is very good, but in lockdown there was no... Life was just so simple, so, so simple. It was like you're not doing anything, you're not seeing anyone, there's no FOMO, nothing's going on, and we're just staying safe and staying at home, and that's what we're doing. And it just was really simple and easy. And I think now as things are starting to open up and we're kind of making our travel plans, and just the kind of the standard stresses of life are kind of, you know, affecting our dynamic again, not in any kind of like terrible way, but I'm just like noticing like, oh, what was simple then is not so simple now. But it was an amazing trip, like just to see all of the country. And I do like, to your point, Kate, that I think what people like in a rom-com, in a romance, is when it is a little messier around the edges, when the characters aren't perfect, when there's not just physical obstacles, like we live in different cities or whatever, but when there's emotional obstacles, because that is just so true for every couple. No one meets as these, you know, fully realized, complete, perfect human beings with absolutely no flaws. And even if you are in a, you know, really great place in your life, everyone is significantly different from their partner in a way that's a fun surprise to learn after you've like gotten out of bed, you know, and you're like, oh, like you're an introvert and I'm an extrovert. Like, okay, we're going to figure this out. And I've never done that before, but we're going to do it now. So I think that's what people relate to. And I'm sure that's true of your romance as well, which I'm so looking forward to reading when it comes out.
Get ready. I'll be sure to hit you up for galley. I'll be sending you all sorts of goodies. You know how it goes.
Yay. Yeah.
Well, I have loved getting to read your work and just getting to talk to you today. It's been so nice. It's been so illuminating getting to chat with you. I'm so glad. I'm so excited to learn that you feel like you don't have your shit together because, you know, maybe that's something nobody feels and it's just everything that is perceived, but nothing that any human being actually ever feels like they do.
I think know. That's true.
Yeah, Georgia, this was so fun. Thank you.
Thank you.
Georgia, where can our listeners find you on the internet to follow along with all your adventures and your writing?
I am online at georgiaclark.com and I'm on Instagram. Georgia Lou Clark is my name there. And I have a monthly newsletter, so you can sign up at georgiaclark.com and it has a lot of writing tips and news and book reading recommendations and lots of fun stuff like that. So I would love to see you there.
It's a really good newsletter, I will say. I read it in full. And your new book is It Had to Be You, which is out now. Everyone should grab it and read it and feel all the goodness of love.
Yes, it's very feel good.
Thank you, Georgia. All right. Well, that was Georgia. Hope everyone was taking notes during the cheese portion.
Yeah, I was going to say, not too cheesy of an interview.
That was good, Kate.
Not that good. I was been trying to think of like some good cheese puns to drop here, but I'm like drawing a blank. Like cheddar, I barely know her.
Yeah, that's not that great.
I tried.
What about, it was a pretty Gouda interview.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, that's not bad.
It's not bad, but I feel like it's not quite up to my regular standards.
Well, and then, like, I'm like, I don't really know a lot of cheeses because I'm like, what am I supposed to do? Like, Manchego, that was a good interview. I mean, these are not good. This is not good.
No, these are bad. All right, let's move on.
I don't know. Should we? I could do this all day. All right, let's intent, Dory. You wanted to exercise in some way every day.
Yeah, I wanted to just kind of like move my bod. And I'm pretty sure that I did this partly because I've reinstated afternoon walks with Henry. I don't know if people recall my former habit of taking an afternoon walk with Henry, but I've reinstated it, but they are now quite slow because he has one of those little wooden like pull dogs. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Dory. And he pulls it on your walk?
And he pulls it. And so like we'll go out in the stroller and after a few minutes he like signals that he wants to get out of the stroller and he gets his little doggy out of the stroller basket and he has to walk the dog whose name is Pepe. It's on his little tail. So he walks Pepe, but as you can probably imagine, this is a rather slow journey.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just like a nice time to be outside in the sunshine, walking around, but it's not, that's just like moving. It's just getting outside and like moving. I hesitate to characterize it as exercise per se, but it is very nice and it's nice to spend time with Henry in that way. And yeah.
Give the wooden dog a nice walk.
Give the wooden dog a nice walk. And, you know, it really does charm everyone that we run into.
I mean, it's adorable.
It's very cute.
Like, that's so sweet.
And he takes it very seriously.
I can't imagine him doing it any other way. He's a very focused person. He's got to take care of that dog.
Focused child. And he gets very upset if it's time to go back in the stroller.
And like Pepe hasn't pooped yet?
It's unclear if okay. Pepe has pooped. So yesterday, kind of wising up to this, I just took him on a very circumscribed walk, like in a circle around our block, essentially, so that we wouldn't go on any really busy streets where he would have to go in the stroller.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just walked back to the house, and that seemed to be okay. But
that
anyway,
satisfied him. Okay.
More on the adventures of Henry and Pepe to come.
I would read that book.
This week. I have a ton of work. Like, I'm just like staring down the barrel of a ton of work. And also because I would like to sort of take this weekend off to relax, which means that I'm going to come back and just be like slammed. But I'm going to try not to just go into panic mode. That's my intention for the week. Don't go into panic mode.
How can I help you? Is there anything I can do to kind of help lessen the load?
No. Thank you, though. I appreciate that.
Anytime.
Anyway, Kate, how about you?
Okay, well, I had to double up and repeat my intention, which was making an appointment with my therapist. That is done, which clearly, as we've established, I have a lot to talk about with her. So I'm really looking forward to that. And this week, Dory... Okay. Well, like circling back to my executive function issues, I have been trying really to write down like everything I need to do. And in my little notebook, I have house cleanup spots. So I would like to kind of get going on this house cleanup spot list, which is kitchen counter, bedside tables, and then my dresser and my bathroom counter. And I will say like, it's a lot of it is just like covered in skincare products, like just covered.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's no other way to put it. And I'm going to talk about this further on in another episode because I've kind of come to the realization that, like, you know what? I love a lot of prods. I'm not going to be a prod minimalist here. I'm going to be a maximalist. But I need to figure out where to put everything. So there you go.
I'm right there with you.
So those are the spots. that are calling to me. So if I at least get through one, I will feel like I've accomplished this. So I'll check back in a week.
I'm rooting for you.
Thank you so much. I need all the support I can get.
Well, this has been a joy, as always. And I look forward to continuing our conversations, Kate.
Yeah, I mean, nothing's stopping us now, huh? We've been at this for That's a while. True. And we're not slowing down. Nope. Listeners, this podcast, Forever 35, is hosted and produced by Dori Shafrir and Kate Spencer, and it's produced and edited by Sammy Junio. Sam Reed is our project manager, and our network partner is Acast. And we look forward to talking to you later.
Bye.
Bye.